So I'm going to be talking about the distribution of misoprostol in post-abortion care services in La Paz, Bolivia. I have no disclosures. So the objective was to investigate the use of misoprostol in post-abortion care services in Bolivia. This is part of my capstone slash thesis during my master's degree. And misoprostol, if you guys don't know, is an off-label drug that's used also as an abortifacient and also to treat or prevent postpartum hemorrhage. Just a little bit about the physiological aspect of misoprostol. I'm not really going to focus on the science of it, but just more so the public health program development of it. It's defined as losing 500 milliliters of blood within 24 hours of delivering a baby. So obviously that's a lot, and it's about two towels, just to give you some context in a developing country, what that would look like. And some of the common causes for maternal mortality globally is postpartum hemorrhage and unsafe abortion. And so Bolivia is landlocked, and that's La Paz, and that's where I did my study. And I'm going to start talking about the population and what their restrictive abortion care laws are. They actually only provide abortion to a woman if her life is in danger, if she can prove that she's been raped or it was a case of incest. And you can imagine in a country that's developing still, the judicial system doesn't really kind of like upspring really fast, and you can actually talk about whether or not your case was, you know, confirmed that you've been raped or not. So most women that have been raped actually do go to term. And right now, the maternal mortality ratio as of, I think, 2 years ago was a little bit lower than that, and now it's 190 per 100,000 live births. And misoprostol is on WHO's essential medicine list, so it's used for obstetric care, but primarily for GI problems. And post-abortion care services was kind of a system that was kind of in place by the International Conference of Population and Development in Latin American and African countries, where abortion care services were very restrictive. So these kind of services were used to kind of address that need post-abortion, considering that everyone's acknowledging that, yes, there are abortions happening, so we need to actually implement something that's post-abortion care services, but not actually addressing the abortion portion of it. So these were implemented in a bunch of developing countries, and there's been comparative studies between Bolivia and Mexico. So I kind of looked at just the South American, Central American region, and it actually shows that there's been significant improvement, even though it's not specifically for abortion. And SUMI is a health insurance plan. So it covers pregnant women and children up to 5 years of age in Bolivia. So this is a local insurance plan. And it covers hospital delivery, C-sections, kind of treatments of complications of postpartum hemorrhage. But it won't give misoprostol to control postpartum hemorrhage because it has abortifacient properties. The other flip side is that only 57% of Bolivian women are giving birth within the healthcare system too. So whoever's coming through the doors, they're actually being able to address this situation after the fact, but not with misoprostol that has been shown to be efficient in efficacy is very high when comparing to oxytocin, for example. That's another recommendation for controlling postpartum hemorrhage, but in low resource settings, it's actually shown that misoprostol is more efficient. So it's also used in conjunction with inducing abortion and treating GI ulcers. It's also used for labor induction and treating postpartum hemorrhage and preventing it. So there's multiple ways of use. I really don't want to focus on the clinical aspect of it, so we can have more conversation about the more program side. So I also did a literature review that kind of looked at the effectiveness of the drug in different low-resource settings and what the availability is of the drug, and particularly looking at Bolivia as well. It was a little bit of a challenge to look at maternal mortality within Bolivia. There's several organizations that are doing work there that are gaining traction now, but during the time 2 years ago, for me, it was one of my challenges to actually get enough information gathered that had to do specifically with the drug and post-abortion care services. And so I'm going to talk about my study And this study actually, it was a bigger challenge to actually get people who wanted to be a part of my study. So I kind of wanted, I had to resort to snowball sampling where I had to ask people if they knew other people and what other connections should I make. And ideally I went in like, oh, I want to talk to program directors of different organizations because they'll know what's going on the implementation side. And only three were totally up for having the conversation. And then eventually I ended up getting two female providers that were working in OBGYN services. So I only was able to reach five people after calling about 50. So that was a little bit enlightening. So just ethical considerations that the IRB was approved by my university, and I created a comfortable environment. There was no risk, and participants were not compensated. Some of the results and the implication, I did not ask for any identifying information. So in terms of age specifically, I didn't ask, but most people looked like they were middle-aged, and male versus female. But other than that, I really didn't ask anything specific. So if there are questions relating to that, I wouldn't be able to answer those. And some outright declined to talk about misoprostol at all. So having a conversation, some people even started bringing in the illegality of me bringing up the situation because of misoprostol being known as an abortive fashion. And that was something that I looked at in terms of what do people actually understand the provisions of post-abortion care services to be? And what are some understandings about the drug? And what do they think they can actually really talk about? So I went to this hospital, and although kind of by default, because the organization I was working with had like med students that were coming from Cuba, and so they were also doing their rotations at this hospital, rural hospital in El Alto, and they were like, oh, you know, you should go see how these services are done and stuff, and I was like, okay, so I'll go and stuff. Finally reaching there, the OBGYN did not want to talk to me at all. She was like very hesitant to have the conversation. She was like, I don't even know why you're talking to me about this. And I was like, well, it's part of the provision in Bolivia. You know, we can have this conversation. So it was kind of very unsettling, and there was a bunch of tension too. But it was also with the grain of salt that she's coming from Cuba. So she was Cuban, and having those kind of bridges with the Cuban government and the Bolivian government. So it's just a sensitive topic. So people that are coming in from an international standpoint too, it's been a bit of a challenge to have that conversation. So us public health professionals going in too kind of have to have that mindset as well. So it was a bit frustrating, but then at the same time it was a bit understanding from what kind of point of view she was coming from. But I think it's also one of the challenges that you encounter doing any kind of global health work. So I asked about what PAC services people knew about, and they were like, oh, you know, we utilize them, we don't, but this is very anecdotal. And the preferential way of completing an abortion is the MVA, the manual vacuum aspiration, and then for prevention using the IUDs. And something that's very common, clearly only 57% are known to come into the hospital setting, but some women don't come if their abortion was successful at home. So that's also saying that they're quite possibly actually using the medication and getting it elsewhere. So I asked a male managing director, you know, what do you think is the difference between the public use of misoprostol and the private use? And he said that the private sector wants to use it because it's affordable and efficient, the private sector, in low resource settings, but the public sector prefers the high paying surgical procedures or more expensive medications. And so it was interesting to see that, because I would think that it would be the flip side, where the public would want to save money and want to make things more affordable, but from his perspective, that's what he said was the use of the drug and what kind of services they used. And then a lot of social stigmatization. Another male managing director told me that it's really common for med students also to pick up the drug and use it at home, and their boyfriends can get the drugs for them, or boys and males go get the drugs because it's easier for them to say that they have an ulcer because it's actually primarily used for that, and so they can just go to the pharmacist and say, oh, I've been known to have an ulcer and stuff, and I need this drug, I want that specific drug, and then they would bring it back, and then their girlfriends would use it. So there's a lot of like anecdotal stuff here too. So I asked a couple of organizations what they thought the need and availability of the drug was, and it's on the black market. A lot of pharmacies hand it out to a lot of male partners that come in for their girlfriends and wives. And women do use foreign objects for inducing abortion, and some female physicians said that it's not being used at home because they can't tell us as a provider that they actually attempted to have an abortion at home. So there's different layers of complications to the drug and the way it's accepted, especially from the provider and program director side. And some people thought it was unconstitutional to even talk about the drug, even though it's part of the provision. And just to give you some kind of financial aspect of it, the drug costs about 12 bolivianos per pill, and four pills are needed to completely treat postpartum hemorrhage, which was the focus of mine, my study. But for an abortion, I think it's like three. I'm not really sure. But yeah, so it's like the drug is roughly cheap. I don't know what the conversion rate is right now. I think it's like 30-1. But just to give you some context in American dollars, and so. You can see that it's actually accessible if people have the money, but there's the rural, poor, and indigenous populations that are very marginalized that don't actually get the drugs, and those are the people that are not going to the hospitals to actually have a safe delivery in a clinical setting. So there's that population that needs assistance. So some perceptions of healthcare professionals, healthcare providers are not aware of the medication, according to some professionals, and the current laws, and I clearly had that interaction with some healthcare professionals saying that they really don't want to talk about this situation because it was they deemed it illegal. And some providers are afraid to offer abortion care services because of the current laws are vaguely understood, and this is obviously impacting the post-abortion care provisions. It's definitely used by women. Only some facilities are using this. There's differences between urban versus rural. And the education of women comes into a big factor. This perception of sexual rights differs across organizations as well, even though they're there and they're supposed to be implementing these services. So there's layers upon layers of the complication. And just to say some things about qualitatively of what I gathered, a female director of an OBGYN division had heard about the medication, but she said it's not used at the hospital for PAC services because the current health insurance provisions don't allow the use due to potentially treating abortions. So even in a postpartum situation, it's still not used. So some structured on how to move forward with this is looking at Article 266 specifically. Abortion needs to be redefined, the abortion legality of it needs to be redefined, but also having a unified protocol to provide the benefits of scientific progress because it's been proven that misoprostol is actually effective and efficient in low-resource settings. And health education is definitely important for women to actually use the drug safely and in safe situations, and also to create a common supportive environment for women to discuss abortions and related health services despite what the understanding is. So it seems like there also needs to be health education, not at the population level, but also from the provider level of what the acceptance is of the drug in the country. And so some, I guess we need to go out there and do that. And so there was different themes looking at public versus private hospitals, the social acceptance of it, there's a fear of it, there's a vague understanding. So kind of like these things just came up over and over again while doing this kind of work and facing it. So it's a bit challenging to come up with something that's actually addressing these things because it's a very subjective matter as well. And because of Bolivia being a very religious society, they kind of based it on that. And so it's a bit difficult to get any traction. And a lot of people actually agreed that this medication, if it was accessible, it would lower MMR. It's the least expensive option, and it only could be met if ethic health education was incorporated. So a lot of providers told me, like, we need to have more initiatives that focus on the health education portion, and from all kind of clinical perspective and at the population level. And there were limitations. I obviously had a small sample size. I didn't collect demographic information, and I had to structure the questionnaire to be sensitive to that conversation about abortion laws and making sure that I didn't create that kind of hesitancy. And then obviously everybody had a bias of opinions based on their organizational work and mission. So there is a demand for misoprostol in a country where post-abortion care services are offered. It also suggests that My study also suggests that there's a fear amongst healthcare workers and public health officials in Bolivia when discussing misoprostol because of its association with an illegal activity. And in order to address this, it's really difficult to come in and just be like, oh, let's legalize the drug and this is what's going to happen. I mean, there's clearly different political agendas across the board, and it depends on where they're getting their funding and disseminating this information. So it's a bit of a challenge, to say the least, on how to actually address this. So as for myself, in an experiential kind of way, it was difficult to figure out how I would actually solve this situation and actually to come up with something that was concrete enough. So just future recommendations have to do specifically with health education and then just disseminating the information about what the health policy is. And the discussion also needs to shift towards looking at what the causes are of unwanted pregnancies and not just abortion. That has to do with access to contraception as well. And then looking at it from a global perspective, on how other countries are actually using misoprostol effectively. So these are my references. And that was the view from one of the hospitals I worked at. I thought I'd add that.